It is Monday, August 5th, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. Ozarks at Large is underwritten, in part, by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. The Eureka Springs Original Ozark Folk Festival presents a live recording of Michael Jonathan's Wood Songs Old Time Radio Hour on Saturday, October 26th, in the City Auditorium. This recording will be aired on public radio and television stations, as well as the Armed Forces Radio Network. A limited amount of tickets now available online at the AUD. That's AUD.org. Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, a Facebook job posting a day approach to getting people in the Fort Smith region who are looking for work connected to potential employers. Work Fort Smith is taking a small but consistent path to connecting those seeking work to those seeking employees. We'll also review the past 7 days in Arkansas politics and business with Roby Brock from Talk Business Arkansas and two approaches to solar power, including area high school students taking to a swimming pool to test their newly created solar-powered boats. And Meredith Martin-Motes continues her series on books about Arkansas with a review of a study of the man who brought electricity to the state, Harvey Couch. First, new revenue numbers for the state show that during the first month of the fiscal year, Arkansas had a surplus of nearly 2%. John Shelnut, an economist with the Department of Finance and Administration, says in July, net available revenue totaled $410 million.
Sales tax collections came in above forecast with 4.5% growth. That's the second month in a row of fairly good growth in sales tax, which had been down in many months in the past year. Motor vehicle sales helped push the sales tax collections higher.
There was a drop in individual income tax collections, but Shelnut says that was offset by an increase in corporate tax collections.
It's nice to start off the year with an amount above forecast and create a buffer there.
Overall, the state's revenue shows growth of 4.5% compared to last year. The Bentonville Bella Vista Chamber of Commerce is supporting the millage campaign by the Bentonville School District. Dana Davis, president of the Chamber of Commerce, says the chamber's support of the election is more than just a piece of paper and that the chamber will actively support the issue.
We're going to be involved with the school board, the school system, and we're going to be involved with businesses and making sure that the message gets out there to individuals and making sure they understand, first of all, it's a business decision. Secondly, it is about the kids in the schools and the fact that we have reached capacity and that we're going to be significantly over capacity. Even if this is adopted, by the time the new school is built, we are going to be probably 1,000 students over what would be the ideal capacity for the existing school.
Davis says it's imperative that the community hear of the importance of the millage election from a business perspective, which is why he says the chamber is one of the tools in delivering that message. One way the chamber says it is helping deliver the message is by being part of a legislative ballot question committee, which the chamber board authorized Davis to form.
Which is the committee that you have to form with the State Ethics Commission in order to be a proponent for or against something and to raise money. And so they've authorized me to do that. They've authorized me to open a bank account so we will actually be receiving those funds and distributing those funds as expenses come up. So we'll be engaged from that perspective. We will be out in the community, certainly as part of the Speaker's Bureau, making sure that people understand what the issue is and that we think this is the way that we have to proceed in order to solve it.
The millage election is scheduled for September 17th. The Illinois River Watershed Partnership has received more than $1 million through grants to fund green infrastructures and water filtration projects in Benton and Washington counties. Delia Hawk, director of the Watershed Partnership, says the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency provided about 57% of the funds, while local sponsors of the IRWP provided the matching 43%, or about $442,000. Hawk says one of the projects to use the money will involve installation of green infrastructure at five trailheads along the Razorback Regional Greenway.
The Greenway follows many of our upland creeks and streams here in the watershed. And so we want the Greenway to be enjoyed, of course, but we want to educate people on how they can protect land and water. There's such a great connection. You can't protect the water if you're not protecting what happens on the land. and we're working with the cities and the Alta Greenways on those projects.
Hawk says another project using grant money will involve installation of green infrastructure at the group's watershed sanctuary being developed in Cave Springs. She says developing green infrastructure at the cave and springs there should have an impact on water quality downstream.
Out of that cave, then the water underground spring goes into a lake and then into an outfall into Osage Creek, on down to the Illinois River, on down through Oklahoma, and so on. So what we do here upstream in this urban water and urban forest impacts everything downstream of here. So we want to put green infrastructure features here that protect this property, but also protect everything downstream because of the benefits that are being put in here locally.
Both projects are expected to be completed in 3 years. Fayetteville has made it onto yet another top 10 list. The city is ranked 9th on the top 10 best college towns 2013 by livability.com. According to the website, students at the University of Arkansas are celebrated for their community outreach through initiatives like the Full Circle Food Pantry, helping with literacy programs for elementary school children, and for involvement in the Clinton Global Initiative. Livability.com also noted that Fayetteville has turned into a haven for entrepreneurs and innovative companies, and that attractions like Walton Arts Center, Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue, and Dixon Street add to the city's appeal. Fayetteville was ranked ahead of College Station, Texas, while Boulder, Colorado was ranked as the best college town in the country. Beginning this evening, one northbound and one southbound lane each of Interstate 540 will be closed between exits 69 and 72 in Springdale. The lane closures will take place between 8 p.m. and 6 a.m. through Friday as crews begin preparing for construction of Interstate 540 and Don Tyson Parkway interchange. Starting next week and continuing through November 1st, all lanes of traffic will be open, but the shoulders will be closed along that same stretch of interstate. Former women's Razorback golfer Stacey Lewis won the British Open yesterday. She shot an even par 72 in the final round of competition. In total, she shot 280 through the four rounds of the tournament. Lewis's win makes her the second Razorback to win at St. Andrews. Former Hog John Daly won the British Open on the men's side of the professional tournament in 1995. Stacey Lewis is only the second American woman who's won the event and the only American who has won more than one major in the last 5 years. The Northwest Arkansas Naturals had a rough weekend hosting the Tulsa Drillers in Springdale. The Nats were shut out Friday night 5-0. Not much luck on Saturday either, as the Drillers scored 3 in the ninth and had a 6-5 win over the Nats. Last night, the Naturals hung on to a tied ball game into the 11th inning when Tulsa scored after a single and a two-base error. And the Drillers defeated the Naturals last night 3-2 at Arvest Ballpark. Naturals have a day off today. They'll return to the road tomorrow for 6 games in Texas, starting with a 3-game set against Corpus Christi. Slight chance of showers and thunderstorms tonight, lows in the mid-70s. Partly sunny tomorrow, highs between 95 and 100 throughout the listening area. Heat index values as high as 106 tomorrow afternoon for the Arkansas River Valley. And tomorrow night, partly cloudy, lows in the lower 70s. This is Ozarks at Large. If you checked out the Facebook page operated by Work Fort Smith this morning, you saw job listings for an inventory supervisor at a Fort Smith company, a cashier at another, a receptionist for a Fayetteville-based operation that would offer employment in the Fort Smith area, and many others. The daily posting is an attempt to connect employers needing workers to people in the Fort Smith region who may have lost their job. Miles Crawford is one of the people behind Work Fort Smith. Last week, I met him at a coffee shop along Rogers Avenue in Fort Smith to ask him about the effort to get employers and would-be employees together. He says the idea came to life a couple of summers ago when Whirlpool formally announced they would close their operation in Fort Smith. It's a simple premise: post job opening so people seeking employment have one more place to find them.
It's just hard to find. There's really no one uniform source. A lot of different people refer to job listings, Indeed, Monster, maybe something of that nature. maybe through the Department of Workforce Services to try to find work. And then other folks will go through local newspapers or printed ads. And there's really no uniform media and outlet for job seekers in this region. And as a result, I've seen personally many people who are unemployed who are more than qualified for entry level and ready to take jobs that, you know, start out at around $30 a year, maybe not what they were making, but above minimum wage and a good starting position.
Miles says the range is wide when it comes to the types of jobs, though most of the postings are directed toward people with previous work experience, not necessarily people coming straight out of college.
We try to stay away from the, you know, first-time job seeker market for the simple fact there's plenty of retail positions and the such that I believe that they could probably go find just with beating the pavement. The positions we like to play up in this region are jobs for those that have a proven employment history, have a good track record, that make good employees, but for some reason or another have just been out of a job.
The geography covered is wide as well. He says they're including jobs available in a roughly 50-mile radius. So there have been notices about positions open in Altus, Boonville, eastern Oklahoma, and Greenwood. Recent postings have included employers seeking licensed plumbers and electricians, administrative assistants, and benefit specialists. Miles Crawford says one side goal is to keep people in the region here who've lost their jobs. But he says it can also be a big help to some smaller firms who have tight budgets and even tighter schedules and have a hard time devoting energy to finding somebody to fill an open position.
They do the age-old word of mouth through the grapevine, friends of a friend type thing, right. And those are really the people that have been using it the most frequently, at least. Smaller local employers with maybe 5 to 10 employees, but a great company to work for. Just a little bit harder to find the positionings because they're not going to be played up as much as an opening at a larger company around the area. So it's a little different beast trying to find those jobs, but I find those can be some of the most rewarding jobs.
The jobless rate for the Fort Smith metro region for June, the last month for which data is available, was 7.7%. That was a tenth of a percentage point bump up from the previous month. And June 2013 is the 54th consecutive month that unemployment in the Fort Smith region has been above 7%. One silver lining in those numbers from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, the number of employed people in the region moved up just a bit by about 2,000 to about 125,500 people. Miles Crawford says he knows a job posting a day on social media won't resolve the bigger problems, but with Facebook and other outlets, it can help.
Now, with Twitter, obviously, we're limited to 140 characters, so we can't get nearly as much info. We generally post a quick intro sentence and say, refer to Facebook for, you know, more details. If people don't have Facebook, they're more than welcome to email us the resume as well.
Some radio stations in the area have also donated some time to air the postings of the day, and a few newspapers around the region have also listed them. Miles says there are schemes to get even more coverage of the available jobs.
We're working on getting a sponsor for the region to help actually up our paid advertisements, and that's actually something we're working on right now. So hopefully within the next month or so, you'll be seeing us on more media outlets, more printed page. There's a lot of them that, you know, just for the simple fact, a lot of revenue from printed papers comes from job postings. So they don't really necessarily, it would be against their best interest to post this for us. So we're working on getting local sponsors and supporters to make sure that we can get the word out there as well.
Miles Crawford is helping operate Work Fort Smith. I talked to him last week in Fort Smith. You can find the Work Fort Smith Monday through Friday job listings at their Facebook page or follow them on Twitter. You can also contact them directly through email at workfortsmith@gmail.com. And jobs are part of the subject matter Roby Brock examines in his weekly review of the previous week's news for Arkansas.
An unfavorable tax ruling dropped Entergy Corporation's net income by 55%. The New Orleans-based electric utility company said it would cut nearly 800 jobs across its multi-state footprint. Nearly 165 jobs will be shed in Arkansas, where Entergy is the state's largest electric utility provider. The company employs approximately 2,700 workers across the state. Entergy Arkansas President Hugh McDonald said no frontline workers in the field would lose their jobs, but he expects a call center to close in Little Rock by the middle of 2014. Murphy Oil, which is poised to spin off its retail and refinery operations, posted higher second quarter net income compared to 1 year ago. The El Dorado-based oil and gas company recorded earnings of $402 million compared to $295 million 1 year ago. Revenues climbed higher to $7.2 billion. A contributing factor to the boost in income was an after-tax gain of $72 million from the sale of two oil fields during the just-completed quarter. Axiom Corporation saw revenues slide and earnings hold close to unchanged as company leaders disclosed a string of lost business and efforts to turn around what leaders called bad luck. The Little Rock-based data marketer and management company reported first quarter earnings of $13.1 million compared to $13.3 million 1 year ago. Revenues dipped from $271.6 million in last year's first quarter to $266.1 million in the most recent period. Metropolitan National Bank cleared a $1.3 million second quarter profit, a big improvement from its $423,000 net loss 1 year ago. It's also the third consecutive quarter that Metropolitan's posted a profit. The Little Rock-based privately held financial institution is undergoing a somewhat convoluted ownership change in the wake of former major shareholder Doyle Rogers' death and a regulatory consent order to shore up its capital ratios. For the first 6 months of this year, Metropolitan's total net income was almost $2 million. KATV and All Britain stations are selling to Sinclair Broadcast Group. Sinclair has entered into a definitive agreement to purchase the stock of the holding company that owns Little Rock's KATV Channel 7 and other All Britain TV stations for $985 million. Following the trend of other successful local business incubators across the state, downtown North Little Rock will be the new home to the latest entrepreneurial hub, the Argenta Innovation Center. The center, which has raised close to half of its $2.5 million goal from private sources, will be the first phase of the Arkansas Regional Innovation Hub, which will house three interconnected ventures that will work together to provide education, training, prototyping, and startup and entrepreneurial opportunities. I'm Roby Brock, and that is your Talk Business Arkansas update.
Roby Brock covers Arkansas's business and political news at talkbusiness.net. Support for Talk Business Arkansas on Ozarks at Large is provided by Mitchell Williams Law, providing strategic counsel on a variety of sophisticated legal matters since 1954. Mitchell Williams Law Firm combines decades of diverse professional experience to clients across the U.S. Today, the firm employs nearly 80 attorneys from four offices in Arkansas, Texas, and New York. Online at MitchellWilliamsLaw.com.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Next time on Here and Now, Anthony Weiner, Elliot Spitzer, two New York politicians with a lot of baggage. What are voters thinking? Also, Doctor Who fans get the news they've been waiting for about the latest incarnation of the otherworldly adventurer. That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
Here and Now this afternoon at 1 on KUAF. In about 6 minutes on Ozarks, a couple of dozen area high school students spent Friday afternoon at the pool. Not exactly news, right? Well, these students were finishing a week at an engineering camp at the University of Arkansas and trying to get their solar-powered boats to work on a cloudy day. First, more solar. The southern United States is starting to use more solar energy to power businesses and households. Texas led a 2012 spike in purchases of solar energy in the south by ordering over 12% of the country's solar wattage. Maggie Carroll from our content partner KUAR in Little Rock has this report about the rate of growth of and interest in solar power in the south and Arkansas.
Drive by Little Rock's VA hospital and you'll see the largest number of solar panels in the state, right on top of their parking area. They are indicative of a regional move, albeit slight, towards solar. With Texas ordering 400 times the amount of solar panels that are on the VA hospital's parking lot, the South is becoming more interested in renewable energy. Chris Warren, a journalist and former editor of Photon magazine, has covered all things solar since the early 90s. Last year, he began to see this significant change.
There were these developments in the South that started to surprise me, including Texas in this, but also North Carolina, Tennessee, Georgia. And over a series of months and, you know, as long as a year, I could see that there were some interesting developments that weren't driven by this normal paradigm of lots of incentives. It was no incentives. It made me realize that there were some market dynamics that were starting to infiltrate parts of the country that had not been very keen on supporting solar.
Solar power, the conversion of sunlight to electricity, is now gaining respect as a viable option for both household and corporate energy consumption. Warren covered this phenomenon in his piece, The Revolution Will Be Solarized.
This came out literally just a week after my story came out. Half of all new generation in the United States in the first quarter was solar.
Arkansas's market is regulated, with very few electric companies providing all of the service to the public. Entergy Arkansas is one of the largest utilities in the state and services 700,000 customers. 90 of those are solar customers. Entergy Arkansas spokeswoman Sally Graham says the company will work with solar users.
Well, we certainly encourage any customer who is interested in supplementing their energy usage with wind or solar to contact us, and we'll work with them in installing the net metering devices.
Currently, nuclear and coal provide the bulk of power in the state. While the company supports solar, it has made no official decision to pursue it as one of its energy sources.
We believe long-term solar energy has great potential due to lowering cost and sustainability. Its challenge has been its ability to compete on cost. And as a regulated utility in the state of Arkansas, we have an obligation to provide safe, reliable power at the lowest reasonable cost.
Net metering is something that helps solar users get more value from their panels, and approximately 200 homes in the state use it. Net metering lets solar panel users receive credit for any energy they generate and don't use. Frank Kelly, a local financial consultant, was an early adopter of net metering. He and other solar supporters worked to get the Distributed Generation Act implemented around the state.
We got net metering passed in 2001. By 2010, there were less than 50 net metering systems in Arkansas. So it wasn't working. We needed something else to get a spot on the playing field.
J.D. Lowry with the Arkansas Energy Office says that from 2009 to 2011, Arkansas had a $1.8 million rebate program with a large part focused on metering installation.
There was 37 installations between 2001 and 2009. Within the two-year period that we administered this program, we had about 140 installations.
Within 18 months of starting the rebate program, net metering showed a 400% growth when compared to the previous 8 years that saw little metering installation. 32 states currently have renewable portfolio standards with incentives for solar and other renewable energy.
Where you see solar really taking hold in the United States, it's in areas that have something called a renewable portfolio standard or other incentives that are out there to really encourage investment.
Do we have a renewable portfolio standard in Arkansas?
We do not currently have one.
The rebate program no longer exists, but there is still a 30% federal tax incentive available to those looking into the cost of renewable energy. As Bill Ball's backing out his solar-powered tool truck and demonstrating solar-powered generators, it is evident he has been in the business for a while. He's been involved with solar energy in Arkansas since the late 70s and worked to create the Distributed Generation Act. He runs Stellar Sun in Little Rock and says the state incentive program leveled the playing field.
So I went back in 2011, and I went back this last session. And it was, I call it the Distributed Generation Act. Some states are now doing it. And basically, it's a long-term contract where the utility agrees to buy your electricity from you.
The state has yet to approve the rebate or any sort of incentives again. The cost of solar is still higher than traditional energy and therefore a less viable option. While Arkansas utilities offer the option of net metering, they do not invest in solar as a source of power, as other states have started to do. Lowry with the Arkansas Energy Office.
At the end of the day, they have a duty to make sure that the Arkansans have access to affordable energy. And so that's why they push back against renewables. We know that right now, based on the price points, that there is going to be an increased cost. And it's just a different mindset.
The main issue becomes, what goes into calculating cost? When Warren interviewed the CEOs of large solar companies, global warming and pollution never came up. The issue was pure economics.
I think that the decrease of solar prices makes it so that it's more of an even swap. Oh, okay, I can keep my lights on, I can do whatever I need to do. Hey, by the way, I can also help combat climate change. And for a lot of people, I think that's a pretty compelling argument.
In Little Rock, I'm Maggie Carroll.
Friday afternoon, the first Friday of August, was a busy day at the swimming pool at the Eco Modern Flats apartment complex close to the University of Arkansas campus. A few University of Arkansas students were walking around the pool, most of them in cardinal red shirts and khaki shorts. There were about three times as many high school students, some of them with their feet in the pool. Not a bad way to spend one of the last days before school starts, but there is more happening here than just a relaxing, lazy day.
We need Definition, the nemesis, Solar Surfers and Narwhal Nation.
Woo! That's Taylor Kitchens, an industrial engineer major at the University of Arkansas. She's calling for teams of the high school students to place homemade boats into the pool. This is the final day of an engineering summer academy at the U of A. These high school students have spent the past several days constructing solar-powered boats. One small problem on Friday, if you recall, last Friday was an overcast, very cloudy day. So does that matter when it comes to handheld styrofoam boats seeking the sun's help to be able to move across a pool?
And of course it matters, yes. Actually, we originally were expecting our endurance race, which is the race that is performed based on the charge of the batteries from the solar panels. It normally takes 20 to 25 minutes, and today it took 4.5. So if that kind of speaks to it, then yes, it does in fact affect it.
This camp lasted a week, and the campers enrolled in the mechanical and electrical engineering part of the camp have been busy getting their boats ready for this Friday afternoon plunge. Taylor Kitchens, just one of the mentors for the camp, says excitement had been building.
I definitely think it's really cool. This even wasn't something that I had ever heard of when I was their age. And so this is the fourth year that we've done the camp. It's based off of the collegiate competition Solar Splash, with which our College of Engineering actually participates in.
The University of Arkansas doesn't just compete in that collegiate Solar Splash competition, but for several years they've hosted schools from around the country for the international event. And the U of A has also developed a reputation for being one of the better schools when it comes to Solar Splash, having won the championship multiple times before.
It's absolutely a big part of our introduction the first day of camp to let them know that this is based entirely off of a college competition, and someday they could very well be in this position themselves.
The collegiate teams in the solar boat competition spend an entire academic year preparing their crafts to be ready. These high school students had about 51 fewer weeks to build a boat. Granted, these boats are smaller and require smaller charges, but Taylor says the campers at the U of A Engineering Summer Academy put in plenty of time.
But we keep our kids busy from 9 to 5 all 4 days, and they learn about the whole design, the solar panels, how to do circuits, how the insides of the boat mechanics work, and then they spend the first day just designing everything, and then the next 3 days building it. So we keep them very busy. Everyone, can you guys hear me up top? Okay, so Andrew already mentioned sometimes things don't go right with solar energy. Like, it's cloudy and we can't get much of it. So, batteries are not charged enough for the endurance.
The clouds never broke Friday afternoon. In fact, a few sprinkles fell at times. So part of the solar competition had to be scrapped. Though a maze was set up in the pool so teams could still see the benefit of their week-long labor. Taylor Kitchen says finding out that there are bumps along the way is a valuable experience when working in engineering.
Oh, absolutely, and we have to convey that message to the students. Yesterday we came here to Eco Modern Flats to test the boats, and many of them didn't work, and the students were very frustrated, and we had to communicate to them. It takes a lot of troubleshooting, a lot of just messing with the parts, really thinking about why things work the way they do, and did you connect it up correctly, and could it be an electrical issue or a mechanical issue just based on what they did. So we spent just a lot of time working with the students and trying to figure out exactly what was going wrong today and yesterday. And now almost every boat, I think 9 out of 10, have worked completely well, so, which is great.
Your motor wouldn't turn, like it quit turning now. And your servo got weaker and weaker.
The mentors kept working with the high school campers, even though the clouds stayed.
And they can take their solar panels home and plug them up to a voltmeter and see, oh my gosh, they really do work when it's sunny. So, because there's no reason. Like, the solar panels work. They did everything right. It has nothing to do with the kids. It has to do with Mother Nature.
Taylor Kitchens was one of the mentors for last week's Engineering Summer Academy at the University of Arkansas. She talked to us Friday afternoon at the Eco Modern Flats apartment complex swimming pool as the campers tested their solar-powered boats that they built last week. This is Ozarks at Large.
Did we need to take our boat back upstairs?
No, you didn't.
This is Ozarks at Large. Ahead on the program, Meredith Martin-Motes continues her series on books about Arkansas. On today's edition of Ozarks, she looks at a biography of Harvey Couch, the man credited with bringing electricity to the state of Arkansas. Plus, our regular Monday visit from Becca Martin Brown from Northwest Arkansas Newspapers and Arkansongs takes a look at a rockabilly legend who also served in the Arkansas State Legislature. That's ahead on Ozarks at Large. Support for KUAF comes from Soul Yoga Lounge, offering 26 classes per week, focusing on flexibility, balance, strength, and stress relief. Gift certificates, logo wear mats, and handmade bags that support the Give Back program join are available. Located on Dixon Street in Fayetteville and on the web at soulyogalounge.com. The KUAF website giveaway is offering event passes to the Fayetteville Roots Festival August 22nd through the 25th. One winner will receive 2 4-day passes, and those passes include the Friends of the Festival backstage concert, late-night passes, plus the Roots Festival main stage concerts. The drawing will take place Friday, August 16th, during the noon edition of Ozarks at Large. Registration and information available online at KUAF.com.
When you watch a breathtaking performance by an athlete, do you ever wonder how much of that talent is genetic and how much comes from hard work and practice? On the next Fresh Air, journalist David Epstein tells us what scientists are learning about genetics and athletic performance. Some of it will surprise you. His book is The Sports Gene. Join us.
Fresh Air tonight, beginning at 6 on KUAF 91.3 FM.
From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs.
Bobby Lee Trammell of Craighead County was known for being a rockabilly wild man as well as a member of the Arkansas House of Representatives. Raised by musical parents, Trammell was encouraged by Carl Perkins to audition at Sun Records in Memphis, Tennessee after the teen got on stage to perform a song with Perkins' band at a show at Nettleton High School. After being told by Sam Phillips at Sun to come back later, Trammell brashly went to California instead. He met up with Faber Robeson of BB. Faber Robeson was an agent and label owner who worked with Jim Reeves, Johnny Horton, and fellow Arkansasers such as Floyd Kramer and the Browns. Bobby Lee Trammell signed to Faber Records the day after he and Faber Robeson met. Shirley Lee, Bobby Lee Trammell's first single, was recorded with James Burton on guitar, as was this song, I Sure Do Love You, Baby. Burton would soon join the band of teen sensation Ricky Nelson. Nelson starred in TV's Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet and had branched out into pop music. Nelson liked Shirley Lee enough to record it himself with Burton. Trammell said he was considered to appear on the TV show, but was considered too rock and roll. But Trammell was encouraged to write more songs for Rick, who was second only to Elvis Presley in record sales at the time. But inexplicably, Trammell rebuffed the offer, saying he was too busy. Years later, Trammell conceded that not writing more songs for Ricky Nelson, like not returning to Sun Records, was impetuous.
Hey, everybody, let's twist! Well, it's a one, two, three, you're looking good to me. Oh, I say, could you pull no trick? 7, 8, 9, you're looking fine. Along about 10, I wanna do it again. Let's twist! Come on, twist! You're looking fine. Come on, honey, let's twist tonight.
White County native Faber Robeson semi-retired from the music business in 1959. And sold Bobby Lee Trammell's contract. Trammell continued recording for a variety of record labels. He gained a reputation for out-of-control performances in a genre filled with out-of-control performers. Tillman Franks of Lafayette County, who ran the Louisiana Hayride, called him downright vulgar and 10 times worse than Elvis Presley. Offstage, Trammell once climbed the tower of KFWB with his guitar in protest of the Los Angeles radio station not playing his music. Hours passed, and a crowd gathered before the police brought him down. Trammell eventually returned to Arkansas. Back home in Craighead County, Trammell recorded for Alley Records of Jonesboro. Located at 213 East Monroe Street, Alley was run by Joe Lee, who died in 2013.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, here's what you've been waiting for. I give to you the very first American Beatle, Bobby Lee Trammell!
During the musical British invasion of the mid-1960s, Bobby Lee Trammell began billing himself as the first American Beatle. The Nashville, Tennessee label Sims released several Trammell singles in this incarnation, produced by Roland Janes of Brookings in Clay County. To complete the part of being the first American Beatle, Trammell grew his hair out, something he later said brought shame and disgrace to his family and all the people that knew him. Conversely, Trammell recorded this, his own arrangement of the traditional gospel song, Old Time Religion, as Give Me That Good, Good Loving. Trammell soon dropped the first American Beatle name, but continued recording and performing. Only his political aspirations would slow the music of Bobby Lee Trammell. Here in its entirety is Bobby Lee Trammell with I Sure Do Love You, Baby, from 1957, produced by Faber Robeson of BB, written by Trammell and featuring James Burton on guitar and James Kirkland on bass.
Well, I sure do love you, baby, and I won't.
Bobby Lee Trammell of Craighead County with I Sure Do Love You, Baby, from 1957. It's another song of Arkansas. From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs.
Arkansongs is a production of KUAR and Experiment Station Studios. Associate producer is Keith Merks. For more information, go to arkansongs.org. Arkansongs, since 1999.
This is Ozarks at Large for Monday, August 5th, 2013. Meredith Martin Moats is spending some time this summer reading about her home state, Arkansas. And she's also spending some of that summertime telling us about those books. Here is the second part of her series.
The second installment in the End of the Summer Reading series is Stephen Wilson's 1986 publication, Harvey Couch, An Entrepreneur Brings Electricity to Arkansas. Couch was one of the state's early industrial developers, and I initially became curious about him when I kept coming across his name when reading about the disastrous flood of 1927. Known for bringing electricity to the state and founding Arkansas Power and Light, which would eventually become known as Entergy, he also played a fundamental role in early phone service, created radio stations, and succeeded in delivering electricity to both rural and urban areas. When the Arkansas River jumped its banks and covered the state with 30 feet of water, his extensive connections throughout the region made him the obvious choice for flood relief director. Several books have been written about Couch, but this Little Rock-based August House publication remains easily accessible. Written with obvious adoration, Wilson's tale traces Couch's humble Arkansas beginnings, starting out with a profile of his parents and his childhood as a farm boy in Calhoun, Arkansas. Born in 1877, he was an outcast in the Magnolia School until a teacher named Pat Neff took great interest in him, suggesting he was the kind of man who could, quote, build empires. Couch was working for the railroad when he came into contact with men putting up telephone wires. The telephone industry had yet to really take off, and Couch, always in search of economic growth, saw an opportunity that he'd been looking for. He wanted to set up new phone services in places that had yet to receive it, especially in rural areas, like where he'd grown up. So he paid another railroad worker about $50 to exchange routes with him, and took over the route from Magnolia to South Louisiana to set up lines on the side. Soon thereafter, he and the postmaster in Bienville, Louisiana, formed the North Louisiana Telephone Company. Even in those early days, Wilson points out, Couch excelled at seeing economic opportunities in the humblest of places. Couch sold his company to the Bell Company in 1911 and began looking to invest in electricity, which was still spotty throughout the state. Just as with the telephone company, Couch sought to create an interconnected system that would link rural and urban communities. At the time, New Orleans was the only place in Louisiana, Mississippi, and Arkansas that was using electric power to run its industries. The industries that did use energy, such as the timber industry, generated their own through the use of steam mills. Couch discovered that the Arkansas Land and Lumber Company, working in Malvern, was treating sawdust as a waste product, even though it could be used to power steam boilers. Soon after, he struck a deal with the company to build power lines on their property and make use of their waste product and their unused boilers. Quote, for $300 a month, writes Wilson, Couch would buy steam from the lumber company's boilers to give Malvern and Arkadelphia 24-hour electric service for the first time, end quote. This highlights not only Couch's creativity, but also the changing nature of Arkansas industry and Couch's role in facilitating these changes. When the flood occurred in 1927, Couch was still building this empire of Arkansas electricity, and he still had a ways to go. Herbert Hoover, then Secretary of Commerce, came to the state to survey the flood damage. Much of the South was flooded, but Arkansas, historians agree, was the hardest hit. I suggest three things to bring about relief, wrote Hoover. Quote, first, organization. Second, organization. Third, organization, end quote. According to Stephen Wilson, quote, Couch's dream and purpose of providing Arkansas with an interconnected system was proving itself in a most drastic way, end quote. The flood would forever alter Arkansas's agricultural economy and the economic systems that held it up, and Couch was at the center of this transition in a myriad of ways. Author Stephen Wilson offers no real criticisms of Couch, and there's a lot of unanswered questions about his role in industrial development. But still yet, it's an interesting introduction to a man who changed everything about the state. You can read more about Couch and his quest to electrify the entire region, the $2.5 million reconstruction fund he created after the flood, his endless attempts to swoon Eastern investors at his charming cabin on Lake Catherine, which was actually created when he created Rimmel Dam, and his role as one of the 7 business leaders chosen to be a part of the Reconstruction Finance Corporation. In the book, Harvey Couch, an entrepreneur brings electricity to Arkansas. What are your thoughts on Harvey Couch? I'd love to hear about them. You can visit me online at boildowndjuice.com. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Meredith Martin-Motes.
Meredith Martin-Motes is the creator of the blog Boiled Down Juice. She's also the director of the McElroy House Organization for Cultural Resources and Community Action. She's reviewing books about Arkansas for Ozarks at Large this summer. Last week, the University of Arkansas earned a national award. It's not an award you'd want to win if you knew about it ahead of time, but it's one you're pleased to receive afterwards. Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis has this report.
Last week, the University of Arkansas was honored with the Best Crisis Management Award in PR Daily's 2013 Nonprofit PR Awards. The award was given for the university's handling of the Bobby Petrino scandal last year. To get a little more insight about what the award means, I talked with Tyler Landry, the award programs coordinator for Reagan Communications, the parent company of PR Daily.
For the best crisis management category, we were looking at the communication strategies that organizations had to use to overcome some incident within the past year. So our judges were looking to understand the backstory of the crisis and what was going on, and the steps that were taken by the organization. We were looking for creativity as well as a thorough execution of good PR skills that our readers will be looking for to understand how to better overcome crises.
In the wake of the sexual abuse scandal at Penn State University last year, Arkansas had to abruptly address its own controversy surrounding Bobby Petrino. While some organizations might cringe if you were to tell them at the beginning of the year that they were to receive an award for overcoming a crisis in the months ahead, Landry says that the award is something that organizations should be thrilled to get at any time.
We have companies that submit campaigns of incidents that have gone wrong, or be it a photo of an employee or a tragedy that happens in the workplace in which they're called to step up. Companies that successfully navigate these times of crisis or threats to their company or their institution's credibility or reputation, if they're entering these programs, they've already overcome these, and they should be proud of the work that they did, be it by their response time or their response efforts, the way that they mobilized and got their side of the story out ahead of the media or criticisms. So these moments that they've overcome, they should really be proud of for stepping up and helping their organization and overcoming whatever adversity it may have been.
Landry says that readers of PR Daily are public relations professionals looking for the latest and most effective methods of communicating with the public, and that they can learn from the way that organizations handle crises like the one handled by the U of A Athletics Department last year. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Timothy Dennis.
It is Monday, August 5th, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellens. With me, Becca Martin-Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Very good. Thank you.
I'm all right for a Monday.
Yeah. Okay. First Monday in August.
Oh, yeah. We're not going to do that.
Okay.
Again.
Okay. Sorry.
Christina Thomas has explained to me that the reason we think that time goes faster when you're older is because you're not learning.
It's an interesting concept.
I'm going to start learning things so that time doesn't go so fast, and I don't know what Antoinette's excuse is.
Okay.
All right. Words you never thought you'd hear together. Oscar De La Renta and Little Rock.
Okay.
There's an exhibit at the Clinton Presidential Center.
Yes, there is.
Called American Icon Oscar de la Renta, and it includes more than 30 of his creations, including contemporary pieces and more historic ones. It's on display through December 1st, and the museum is open daily, $7 admission for adults, and you can find out more at clintonpresidentialcenter.org.
And there was quite an event to open this.
Yes.
The Clintons were back in town.
Yes.
Yes. As was Mr. De La Renta himself.
So how can you complain? And also going on in the region, Wednesday, Taylor Swift is at the BOK Center in Tulsa. Mm-hmm. On the 16th, Rascal Flatts is at the Verizon Wireless Amphitheater in St. Louis.
All right.
On the 18th, Heart is at the Starlight Theater in Kansas City. Had no idea they were still performing. And on the 20th, Blind Boys of Alabama at the Germantown Performing Arts Center in Memphis.
Ooh. I think there's one, maybe two of the original guys left. I mean, it's been an evolving group for decades, but well worth your time.
As so many of them are. I saw the original Adam Ant last week.
Yes, you did. There's
in
one
Tulsa.
Of him.
Yes, there's one of him. And I looked up how old he is. That's a lot of energy.
Yeah, well.
Much more than I had the next day after getting home at 2 a.m.
I want to also mention, if you go to the Clinton Presidential Library, if you're in Little Rock, make sure that you go to the Arkansas Art Center because they have the exhibit that's up, I think, through September 8th, Rembrandt, Van Dyck, and other European artists.
Oh, that's a good day.
And this is a collection that's not going to be in this part of the country again.
That's a good day in Little Rock.
It is. Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Our priority is to get the Iron Man weapon turned over to the United States of America.
Military leaders are seeking a new generation of body armor.
Why haven't we put effort into ensuring that that guy going through the door is protected to the maximum capability that we could provide him as a nation?
Robotics, new materials, and building an Iron Man suit for the special ops of the future. That story later on All Things Considered.
All Things Considered this afternoon from 3 until 6 on KUAF 91.3 FM. Support for Ozarks at Large comes in part from the University of Arkansas's Women's Giving Circle. The 15th annual KUAF Summer Jazz Series concludes with a performance from the Amina Figueroa Quintet at Walton Arts Center's Star Theater Friday, August 16th. This composer, arranger, orchestra leader, and her ensemble offer a distinctive voice while performing an all-original repertoire. Tickets and more information available online at KUAF.com. The KUAF website giveaway is offering event passes to the Fayetteville Roots Festival August 22nd through August 25th. One winner will receive 2 4-day passes, which include the Friends of the Festival backstage concert attendance, late night passes, plus the Roots Festival main stage. The drawing will be held Friday, August 16th, during the noon edition of Ozarks at Large. Registration and information about the contest available at our webpage, KUAF.com. Speaking of webpages, don't forget OzarksAtLarge.com. There you can hear stories that you may have missed, or if you'd like to share them with others, you can do that through any number of social media opportunities. You can also find out more about the music that you hear inside our programs. That's OzarksAtLarge.com. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks so much for listening. Antoinette Grajeda will join me tomorrow for another brand new edition of the program. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Jasper. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great Monday. Thank you.